Hello, adventurers. Welcome to episode 82 of the show. There usually used to be a fancy little intro with music, but I recorded that way back when I had a special website for this show, way back before the internet accidentally ate the website, and I have no idea how to get it back. And my web design expertise is very minimal. It's not my calling. And so when the internet first ate my website, which gosh was way over a year ago, my thought was, well, let's just pretend this didn't happen and obviously it will fix itself. And that strategy did not work. So it's gone. And it feels silly to play an intro that references like a website and an email address that was tied to the website that don't exist anymore. So I could re-record the intro, but this is a Mother's Day episode. Mother's Day 2020, the pandemic edition. Oh my fucking God, who thought we'd be here? But if I had to record the intro with music, that is beyond my brain's capacity right now. So I thought it was more important to get an episode out into the world without cheerful, upbeat beginning music. And I guess I could start like singing it for you, but singing not my superpower, so I'm gonna spare you that too. I do love to sing though, it lifts my spirits. It's, my God, what a good mood boost. Not when I had postpartum depression though. I literally forgot about music. I still remember, look at me rambling. Rambling is like my signature move, but I still remember like so I had when I had postpartum depression and like 4 months postpartum, go to the hospital, and my parents while I was gone. Nathan moved in with my parents and they were helping him with Pippa, and they found a doula so that she could put a postpartum doula to come help and watch Pippa so that like to help with my recovery, which at the time felt like an absurd luxury indulgence, but which I now look back and see it as a necessity. But anyway, I remember like one day getting out of the shower or something and I could hear the doula in a room with Pippa playing the Phantom of the Opera. And that's like, that was my first musical that I loved. It's, I don't know if it's my favorite or if Wicked is my favorite, but it's still just way high up there. And oh my God. I mean, like, it, like, I was already on my way to recovery. I'd already been to, spent 4 nights in the hospital. I was already on Zoloft now for like a week at that point, and Zoloft worked really fast for me. I was lucky. Some people it takes months. So I was already on the way to recovery, but hearing the music, I was just like it was like a revelation. Like, wait, what? You can listen to music after you have a baby? It's just like depression had like switched off those like circuits in my brain that like, oh, hey, I'm a person and I like music. If you are in the trenches right now with postpartum depression and you hear me talking about music and you're like, oh God, yeah, music. I don't even remember what I like. I suggest thinking about what music you listened to in high school and trying to play some of that stuff. That's like, 7th through 12th grade, that is like the soundtrack of my soul. And okay, no, it's 5th grade through 12th grade. Let's just fully embrace the New Kids on the Block and the deep love I have for them and how I could still start to play Hangin' Tough right now. And just my soul would start to soar. So, but if you're in a place where you're not ready to listen to music, I get it because I forgot about music for 4 months. That's just what postpartum does. It postpartum depression, it can wash away the color from your life and I mean literally remove the music from my life. But this is the 2020 Mother's Day episode. I'm recording this on May 9th, 2020. I can't remember if I said that on you before. I do remember saying I have limited brain capacity because, so we have officially been sheltering at home for 8 weeks. It was 8 weeks ago yesterday that Pippa's school closed, and like some point over the weekend, Julian's preschool closed as well. And it was 8 weeks today. That Nathan's office announced that they would be working from home permanently, and or not permanently, but for the foreseeable future. At that point, permanently was 3 weeks. That was 8 weeks ago, and it's about 7 weeks since like California just like shut down and went into like shelter in place unless you're essential services. So my brain energy keeps changing, and I'm in a good place right now, but I also recognize that holy shit, my brain's just doing a lot, like creating new habits and new routines. I mean, just going to the grocery store is an event. Because think about it, like you go to the grocery store and usually you're basically on autopilot. Like I make a list and I have a way of making a list so that like I cluster different parts, like the produce is on one part of my list and the meat's on one part, so I can kind of look at the list and I know exactly where everything is. Well, our regular grocery store, I haven't liked the way they've been handling social distancing. It's like an older store, so it's a little more crowded. So I've been going to a different grocery store that I don't usually go to, which has, I've always don't go there because I would complain to Nathan, like, this place is too big. There's too much space. And now I'm like, holy God, there's so much space. It feels clean. And like, you know, it just feels like this is like a safe way to handle the situation. So I'm going to a completely different grocery store though. And I'm like, you know, Nathan, like a week ago, was like, okay, pick up aluminum foil. And I couldn't, I had to circle that store twice to find the fucking aluminum foil. It was not where it should be, not based on where, you know, my other store. It was like, why is it with baking stuff? It should be with the bread. It's at the bread at the other store. Why can't you guys all get together and come up with like a uniform template? So, you know, just going to the grocery store, I'm having to hunt things down. Usually I go to the grocery store and my list will list, you know, lists out everything I need. Now, like, you know, it would say salmon and, you know, thin sliced chicken breasts and, you know, turkey patties. So, you know, it like specifies. Now it just says meat. And I have to get there and I have to like really pay attention to the prices. And I mean, for the past 2 weeks, steak was cheaper than chicken. So, like, it's just like my brain is having to think, like, which ingredients are we having? What are we getting? So that's weird. Then you're wearing the mask. Then you're navigating the aisles, and then you're playing, you know, social distancing, the grocery store game, where you're, you know, trying to like respect everyone's space while also like trying to predict like who's going to be upset if you like some people, like you're respectfully waiting like 6 feet away while they and then they're like angry at you, like why didn't you just like walk by? And then some people get really, you know, are freaked out if you get too close. So it's just everything about it. And like every week or two, I go, you know, 1 week it's only this entrance. And then the next week it's that there's three entrances. And then, oh, they closed this part of the parking lot. And now, no, they've reopened it. And now it's, oh, we're going to give you the hand sanitizer. And now go over. So everything's always different. It's taken me so long to explain that going to the grocery store, which used to be just autopilot, kind of zone out, going to go to Starbucks. I can't go to Starbucks and get my iced coffee anymore. Because I'm wearing a fucking face mask the entire time. I went to Target, I think, for the first time like 2 weeks ago because we were low on a couple things that it's like harder to get on Amazon. And it was like I was so excited beforehand. I'm going to Target, yay! And I get there and it just felt ravaged. Like so many aisles were empty and hadn't been restocked. And like Julian needs summer clothes, and the clothes that they have there are the same clothes they had 2 months ago, which, and, you know, usually it's changing every like 3 weeks. There's new inventory. So it was like, it was just very surreal. And then you're wearing the mask and your face is a little hot and you can't get the Starbucks. So, you know, all these simple things have become very complicated. Anyway, I did not mean to turn this into a pandemic episode, but I guess since I'm recording this during the pandemic, that's kind of what's on my brain. But the real reason I wanted to record an episode is so I wrote a memoir also called Adventures with Postpartum Depression. I used to have all of the episodes available, all of the chapters available as an audiobook, but it was taking up way too much memory storage for my podcast hosting. So I had to delete a bunch of those episodes. But the book is still available on Amazon as a paperback, or as an ebook. And I recently, like recently as in yesterday, the signed added the book to Amazon's Kindle Unlimited. So for those of you who are Kindle Unlimited subscribers, my memoir is now available on Kindle Unlimited. And once you join Kindle Unlimited as an author, you are allowed to make the book available for free for 5 days every 90-day cycle. So since it's Mother's Day, I'm making the book free tomorrow and through so Sunday, May 10th. Through Thursday, now I have to check my calendar because this is too much math. Thursday, May 14th. So the book, the ebook, is available for free download. So if Amazon is your, it's only available through Amazon. So if you want a free copy of the ebook, head over and you're listening to this, right now in the May 2020, go ahead and grab your book. And if you like it, I'd be just tickled pink if you would leave a review. I have 9 5-star reviews last time I checked, which is really fun and cool. And but really, it's like the writing the book was the reward. It was a very healing and cathartic experience for me. But I also feel like I need to make a little more of an effort to get the book out there because I know there's people who it would help. Not necessarily moms who have postpartum depression. It could be the husbands and dads who need to understand what their significant others are going through. It could be for someone out there who had their kid 30 years ago and still doesn't under hasn't like processed all the feelings they had, and they're kind of ready to tackle that. It could be for a therapist who just wants to be able to relate with what their clients are going through. So anyway, the book is there and it is free, and feel free to tell anyone you know. It's not just for listeners of the show. And yeah, so that was the main reason I came on to do an episode. But once I had that idea, all the ideas started pouring through my head. Because very exciting. I went to Jack in the Box today and did the drive-through and got a Coke Zero with cherry flavoring. And I pulled up and there's one car ahead of me, so I thought this will be fast. And then it was a pickup truck, and they had pulled away, and there's two guys in it. And then I could see the screen, and it says like your order total is like $65.27. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna be in this line for a long time. And that was okay. I pulled out my bullet journal and I just started writing down all the things I want to talk about. So if you hear the pages crinkling, that's because I have no memory. Because, parenting is rough under the best of circumstances. And now it's a pandemic. And I just want to say, like, I have so much to say, and I'll be incoherent, but I did the episode a couple weeks ago, or I think it was way more than a couple weeks ago, but just for all of you right now, who are struggling, my heart just breaks for you that those first months of motherhood are just so difficult. And, and even the first couple of years. And I mean, for me, or for like 3 months, it was significantly got easier, like a 3 month chunks. Like once, you have a 3 month old, you're like, okay, this is so much easier than a 1 day old. And then when you have a 6 month old, it's so much easier than a 3 month old. I mean, and by the time Pippa was one, I remember all these moms in like our baby classes complaining, like, oh my gosh, they're moving now and they walk and they get into so much trouble. And I was just sitting there thinking, like, well, shit, I don't have postpartum depression anymore. So this is great. This is like so super easy for me. So, but to throw in a pandemic, that just sounds horrifying. But for those of you listening to this, maybe in the future, 5 years from now, or those of you who are living some in a region that is not as affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, don't feel too, like, guilty, because what motherhood is so complicated, and postpartum depression, and when I say postpartum depression, that includes anxiety, OCD, and all the, that's just like my shorthand for all the maternal mood disorders. But it's complicated, and there's just, you have your whole life history, and there's just so many circumstances that can come up. So, like, don't play the comparison game. And for those of you, just whenever you're listening, don't be comparing yourself to someone else, because you don't know what's going on inside of them and what they're struggling with. And like, or maybe they have conquered certain demons and, now they're like maybe having an easy stretch, but you just don't know what someone else's story is. So don't be comparing yourself to others. So, even if it's 2025 and the pandemic is long over, and you're thinking, well, Jesus, all these mothers could do this, living during the pandemic, like don't go down that line of thinking. It's never very helpful. I had something I was going to say. Something that I reminded myself of. See, this is just the way the brain goes. I feel like sheltering at home for 8 weeks now has kind of fried my brain in a way that like new motherhood did. It's sort of like a leveling of your sense of the world, and then you have to rebuild. You go, so many people told me, like, you just don't understand how motherhood's going to change you. And like, then it happens. You're like, oh, they weren't just like, full of, Like, I get it now. You don't really get it until it happens. It's sort of like if someone from the future had come and said, there's going to be this pandemic, and you're all going to be at home for over 8 weeks, and you're going to be living with all of this. I'm trying to use the word mystery because I keep wanting to use the word uncertainty, but uncertainty is for me a very negative term and like undesirable. Whereas mystery is alluring and intriguing and like, who knows it's going to be happening? It might be really amazing and marvelous. So I'm trying to like now think of the future as mysterious. But you know, it's been tough. And oh, that's where my brain was going. Okay, so welcome to my brain. It is sometimes, it's not even scary and dark. It's just kind of empty with tumbleweeds going by these days. I did originally think when I was going to do this episode that I should talk about my first Mother's Day because it's sucked. I wasn't even 2 months into motherhood and I was in the trenches of postpartum depression and it was only going to get worse from there. And I felt very like detached and ungrateful that day. And it was just a very icky day for me. But I already did that. Oh, crapola. I'm not going to curse. Okay, bear with me. My sister just texted. So let me just put my phone on airplane mode. Oh my God. God bless my sister. But she, like when she sends one text, you know there's eight more coming. So like it's one thing to hear like my phone go like dun, 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 once, but like 8 times in a row. No, thank you. Not right now. And she and my cousins are newly obsessed with some Viking show on Netflix, and they got me and Nathan to watch the first episode last night, and we were both very unimpressed. So I'm not going to name the show, but yeah. So I think they're a little appalled. Like, what's wrong with Courtney? And it's just like, sorry, I just not in the mood to see, you know, Vikings setting fire to themselves and killing each other and shoving swords. Oh, God. No. So anyway, the story of my first Mother's Day, I told this in 2018. It's episode 69 of the show. Insert your own lowbrow joke here. And I still remember being in 8th grade and so we were walking somewhere and someone had written, like, our school had like a what they called the social hall, which was like a auditorium for presentations, and you actually left the school campus to walk to this building. So we were walking on the sidewalk and we're on the public sidewalk and our school, so I was at this Catholic school and next door was the public school. Oh my God, the riffraff. You can see me rolling my eyes. This is like the worldview. But they all just seemed older, even though they're same age as us. And excuse me, taking big gulps of water here. And someone had written in chalk the number 69. And everyone's walking by cackling. And I'm like, what? And one of my friends quickly explained to me, and she probably did not even know fully what 69 meant. But that was one of those memories that I still have. And I struggled to remember, like, did I feed the fish 20 minutes ago? But that memory burned into my brain. You know, it'll probably be one of those, like, you know, if I last memories that come up when I'm on my deathbed. Okay, so anyway, episode 69 is the story of my first Mother's Day, and I talked about don't compare yourself to others. So it was sort of my, you know, don't beat yourself up about Mother's Day and my rant about how mothers deserve so much more than one day. And stay off social media was some of my advice. And that's still, I think, damn good advice. And I still am guilty of, not guilty, I'm working on the word guilty. But I still, you know, catch myself comparing myself to others and their photos. And I'm like, what are you doing? You've already fought this through 100 times. So yeah, so instead of that, I'm going to now quote a book I've been reading. It is Untamed by Glennon Doyle. I've finished it and highlighted the shit out of it. It would have actually been more useful to highlight the passages that didn't resonate with me because that may have saved me on highlighter. Because sometimes I just highlighted the entire page and then had to underline and then wrote notes in the margins. Yeah, I'm that type of reader. I can read, I'll get when our library's been closed. Oh my God, for so long. But when our library's open, I'll get fiction from the library because I can just read fiction without highlighting or underlining. But nonfiction, I need highlighting and underlining. And if I'm 50 pages in and haven't highlighted or underlined anything, then like I'm out. Like, this book's not inspiring me. It's wasting my time. Anyway, I read Glennon Doyle's Untamed a couple weeks ago. I wasn't going to get it. So she's written a first memoir, and I forget what it's called. Like, I think it's called, like, Carry On Warrior. I never read that. Her second memoir, I think, was out about 4 years ago, and it was called Love Warrior. And it was about her husband had been cheating on her, and it was sort of her whole reckoning with that and trying to figure out what did that mean to her, you know, to her marriage and to herself, and could she save the marriage? And by the end of the book, she and her husband have, like, I think they've recommitted or renewed their vows or something. And, you know, it sort of ends as a happily ever after, and you're like, oh, okay, they're going to stay together. So I read the book, and I highlighted it and underlined it, and I loved it, and I thought, this is amazing. And then it came out on, like, social media that Glennon Doyle had left her husband, and they were getting divorced. And then it came out that she was in a relationship, and eventually she got married to Abby Wambach, the former, you know, U.S. Olympic soccer player. And I was just like, and I just read the book, and I was just like, what the fuck? Like, was anything in that memoir true? Like, I just read this whole thing about you saving your marriage, and then you're divorced before, like, while the book is on the bestseller list. So I was really pissed at her. And, or not so much pissed, but just disenchanted and cynical. So when this book came out, and people who recommend books, whose opinions I recommended, started raving about the book, I was just like, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Like, I'm not falling for, like, that again. But then I've been listening a lot to Brené Brown's new podcast, Unlocking Us, and she had Glennon Doyle on as maybe her second guest. Let me tell you something. I love Brené Brown's podcast. I haven't listened to the most recent episode, but I've listened to everything else. You might want to skip the first episode. I'm not saying you should just skip it forever, but it is about the Me Too movement. And it was, like, it took me, like, four times, like, like, usually I listen to a Brené Brown episode and I'm like, I'm on a walk and I'm like, I'm going to keep walking as long as possible just so I can listen to the whole episode before I get home. I had to, like, stop listening to this, like, four or five, six times that first episode. It was just really difficult stuff for me to get into. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that, like, we're living in the middle of a pandemic, and it went to too dark a place for me. So I might listen to that episode again in, like, you know, at some point, when I'm not, like, you know, sheltering at home and brain dead from, like, constantly learning how to do new things and stuff. So, I mean, it's seriously, like, we're learning a new language. I think motherhood is a lot about, the beginning of motherhood is learning a new language. Like, just things like Braxton Hicks contractions and nipple cream. And I can't even, like, And you, fortunately, you forget this stuff. The memories fade once you've been away for a while. And it's like learning about teething. Like, I remember when Pippa was, like, 3 months old and she kind of started teething, and I was just like, what? And I didn't realize that teething could last. Like, I sort of imagined teething as, like, a 12-hour process. Like, literally, the kid would be uncomfortable and cry for about 12 hours, and then the tooth would be there. I did not know that teething meant, like, maybe your kid is going to be a little uncomfortable when they're 3 months old, and when they're 9 months old, you'll see a tooth. And it's just like, so you're just learning so much. And I think, like, the pandemic has me thinking, starting to make some, like, it's sort of like I'm experiencing something similar to new motherhood, but in a completely different context. And it's giving me an opportunity to, like, look with fresh eyes, although my eyes aren't that fresh because I'm so tired and worn out. But it's, like, giving me a new way of looking back at, like, that first year of motherhood and at my mental illness and, like, at what was going on. So it has me curious. So anyway, I did hear episode 2, Glennon Doyle's interview with Brené Brown. Within 5 minutes of the interview, I had already ordered the book on Amazon. I was like, Jesus, I need this, and I need this now. And I just inhaled the book. And I wanted it to last longer. Like, it should be, like, an 18,000-page book instead of, like, 333 pages or something. So, anyway, I want to read you. I could just read from you to you from this book for, like, hours. But, okay, on page 128 in a chapter called Eyes, she is talking about the ideas of motherhood and martyrdom. Mothers have martyred themselves in their children's names since the beginning of time. We have lived as if she who disappears the most loves the most. We have been conditioned to prove our love by slowly ceasing to exist. And she talks about that for a couple of paragraphs. And then, what if love is not the process of disappearing for the beloved, but of emerging for the beloved? What if a mother's responsibility is teaching her children that love does not lock the lover away, but frees her? What if a responsible mother is not one who shows her children how to slowly die, but how to stay wildly alive until the day she dies? What if the call of motherhood is not to be a martyr, but to be a model? And that is the work I have to now do on motherhood. And I'm working through this still and figuring it out. For those of you who don't know, I did this show for a couple of years after the birth of my son, Julian, when he was like, I think 6, 7, 8 months old. I can't pin it down exactly in my head right now. Pandemic, hashtag pandemic. But I did this work for a while, and then I had to take a break for various reasons. And I do a lot of writing. I journal, which is private. And I started blogging at the beginning of this pandemic. And blogging is something I have felt called to do for several years. And it's also, and I have kept telling myself, I don't have time. I don't have time. When I have time, I'll blog. And I was always able to think like, you know, oh, when Julian starts preschool, I'll have time. And then it's like, oh, well, now I have two kids in two different schools with volunteering requirements. So when Julian's in kindergarten and my kids are at the same school, then I'll start blogging. And then the pandemic started and school was canceled and my kids were at home all the time. And I had less time than ever for like taking care of myself. And suddenly I couldn't not blog. I couldn't go on anymore. My soul was like, you have to start blogging. So I've been blogging like 5, 6, sometimes 7 times a week. Just sort of depends on, I'm really trying to connect with my intuition, my inner voice. And if it says, if my inner voice is like, okay, blog, then I do that. And if my inner voice says, take a break today, I take a break today. And I have a lot of work to do on my intuition and my inner voice. And I'm thinking that, I think there's layers to postpartum depression and or maternal mood disorders. And for me, you know, I'm 7 years out now. Pippa turns 7 in March. And in those early years, I was able to think about it in terms of hormones and pre-existing anxiety. It was just purely hormones. I even had trouble acknowledging the fact I'd been depressed. I remember being in the hospital attending the small group therapy and telling people again and again and again, I have postpartum depression that has manifested itself as anxiety, insomnia. I couldn't even, it took me so long to be able to see like that what I had been experiencing was also depression, was also a loss of color, also like losing music. Even when I realized, oh my God, I forgot about music, I couldn't connect the dots in my head. Like, and that was because I was depressed. But so for the long time, I was thinking about postpartum depression in terms of like hormones. And then I was able to see that I entered motherhood as an anxious person, a highly functional anxious person, but anxious. And I talk all about that in my memoir and, but how I could see how the hormones kind of like amped up the anxiety and pushed me into the territory of a mental illness. And this is where I'm thinking everything through still, but I'm ready to see that yes, there was hormones going on and yes, there was pre-existing anxiety, but you know, the fact that it gets labeled as a mental illness, I understand I understand why that happens, but I think it also does a disservice. Because, I mean, it's a service because then you can be treated and then you can, your health insurance will cover it and then you can see a psychiatrist and then you can, like, I needed Zoloft. So, I mean, it had to be, you know, like that jumpstarted my recovery and, you know, so that was like necessary for me. But I can also see how it limited my view of what was happening to me, because I'm reading like Glennon Doyle's book, and there's so much about like the idea of being a model to your kids versus a martyr comes up throughout that book, and it's had me thinking a lot. How much is it that I definitely had internalized some before I even became a mother, I had internalized a view of motherhood as martyrdom. And I couldn't have, if you had asked me about it, I would never have said it in those words. But in my mind and in my, I just truly believed that a good mother just gives up everything for her kids. And yet I knew that people went back to work, and I knew that was, and I was like, oh yes, that's fine. And I knew that, people didn't spend, that people still went to the gym. I mean, there's all these things I knew rationally, but I also had this deep-seated, unspoken belief of martyrdom, of like a giving up of yourself to prove your love. It was like an idea of needing to prove your love. I think. I mean, I'm still thinking all this through. Like, but I think I'm wading into more. Like, I've done so much healing from postpartum depression, and I've fully recovered from postpartum depression, but I think there's deeper work that I could do. That there was the hormonal aspect, and that was very important for me to learn about, because I am like very sensitive to hormonal fluctuations, and they affect my moods. And there are things I can do in terms of eating and vitamins that help me regulate that. And this is an important thing for me to be aware of. Like, I'm 41 and I'm going to be perimenopausal one day, and then I'll be menopausal. And this is like good shit for me to know that, like, hello, me and hormones. Sometimes things go crazy. And, so it's like a good piece for me to have, like, kind of like come to terms with, or, to at least pay attention to. But I needed to also see that, like, what the role that I had in my mind of what it meant to be a mother, it sort of destroyed my sense of self. And I think that was a piece to my postpartum depression puzzle. That I don't think there's like one piece that's more important than the others. I just think like I'm now ready to see that there were other parts to my crisis. That by, I went, I was a writer, and I am a writer, and I was just a woman with, I'm a woman with many passions and interests, and for me to just give everything up and to only be a mother, that feels very hollow and unfulfilling. And I don't, when I think about my kids, I'm like, is that what I want for Pippa if she is a mother someday? And I'm like, no, I don't want her to basically become zombie Pippa who just gives up anything she's interested in. Like, she's very much a visual artist right now. And for her to be like, okay, now you're a mother, so you need to throw out your paints and use your, you might as well turn your easel into kindling for a fire because you're not allowed to be an artist anymore. Your whole life is now about being a mother. I would be horrified if she did that. So how can I, but if I model that role, I need to be a model of like joyful, passionate living for her, not a model of like, okay, now you're a mother and your life's over. So that is something that I have to work on. And I think the pandemic, the current sheltering at home crisis for 8 weeks, has sort of brought that back to my attention, because like I was getting a little upset about the fact that camps are just closing down here in Pasadena, and it just seems like summer camp is not going to be happening. And then there's talk about more distance learning in the next school year. So it's like, and I was getting upset. I'm like, why am I upset? And I'm like, well, basically, I'm afraid I'm not going to have time to write because Nathan will probably be back at his office, God, where's the wood? Knock on wood. This is sort of fake laminated wood, but knock on it. Because once he's at work, that means we're like moving forward. But I was like, well, so if I'm home with my two kids who are ages 4.5 and 7, with him at work 5 days a week, does that mean I never get to write? And I just stopped. I was like, no, of course not. Like, I can t like they like TV. And they're allowed more TV now, god damn it, because there's like a pandemic, and any of those screen time rules, just bullshit, throw it out the door. And like they will get tired of TV anyway and turn it off and wander off. And Julian's bed is literally a pirate ship right now. Like, the shit they have done to deck this thing out with like cardboard and paper, it takes my breath away. They come up with these very intense imaginative games, and they don't need me right there. And So I have been practicing like the past week, being like, okay, mommy's gonna go sit down and do her writing in her journal for the next 30 minutes, and it's really important that you tell me now what you need. Do you need a drink? Do you need a snack? Because I don't want you to interrupt me. And like, I have to be a little firm with them, but I can set some loving boundaries, and I'm getting my time to write. And I can tell them, like, okay, you're allowed to watch TV now, but only if you leave mom alone and let her write, and I'm gonna turn the TV off, and I won't let them watch TV until it's time for my writing. So, and I'm like, but wait, why am I getting amped up and scared about this? And I'm like, holy shit, I still have this martyr complex, like proving myself to someone who doesn't even exist that I'm a good enough mother with enough art projects and with, you know, if they ask to play a board game, I'm like, of course I'll play a board game. If they ask to do a puzzle, of course I'll do a puzzle. Like sometimes they need to be left alone. And, you know, and those of you with young, you know, with little babies, like when they nap, you don't have to like be productive in a way that like, you know, you don't have to be sterilizing bottles or cleaning floors or doing something, you know, doing housework or, you know, writing thank you notes. Just text your thank yous or don't even say anything. Like, you know, if people are giving you a onesie just for the sake of a pretty thank you note, then their intentions aren't very good. Or, like, I did not even get this. I remember when Pippa was a baby and she had this play mat and, like, one of those, like, gyms where you, like, kind of lay on the floor and the baby looks up at like the little stuffed animal goes goo goo. It was like she did the Zerfie day. And I would sit there and just watch her do it. And yes, it was really cute and sweet, but I didn't have to watch her do this for 30 minutes twice a day for like 6 months. Like it actually got a little boring. And but I lost myself during the depression and it never occurred to me like I can sit here with my journal on my lap and sit with my back against a wall and do some writing. I remember my psychiatrist at the time would like be like, you need to set up baby gates so that there's a room where she's safe and she can explore, and you can sit on the couch and be reading a book or writing or doing your thing while she does her thing. And I really struggled with that. And you know, I just felt like I had some view of motherhood where I had to always be engaged with her if she was awake. And, you know, and I'm sure I got that from all sorts of sources. And, you know, no one thing to blame. And it was just that I had internalized this, like, impossible standard of motherhood, which required me to give myself up. And as much work as I've done in terms of healing myself from postpartum depression and recovering, I can now see, like, damn it, I can do some more work. I can, like, tell my kids, no, I'm not going to play the board game, but you know, I will gladly get down Candyland and you can play together. Like, I've just been forced because there's more housework to do. Everyone's home. There's more dishes. There's more laundry. You know, there's just more work and less time to do it. And like, I've not been jumping to entertain my kids all the time, and they are thriving. I know it's different with babies, but they're, you know, I think my heart breaks extra hard for everyone who is having their first child during this situation, because the second child, it's so much easier to neglect, and you're not neglecting, but you think of it as neglect, the second child, because like Pippa was 2.5 when Julian was born and not potty trained. And you know, Julian, I couldn't hold him all day because I sometimes had to wipe his sister's butt and change her diaper, and I had to feed her. And so I wasn't always holding him and always taking care of him. And it was really hard for me with my first child with Pippa to not do that. And I'm still having to teach myself, like, you don't have to like talk her through or walk her through everything. You can give her some independence and let her, and they're thriving. So, okay. So I've been ranting enough about that. And so Glennon Doyle's really inspired me to be less of a martyr. And I'm also doing a lot of work on connecting with my intuition. And I've already been talking for 39 minutes here, so I don't want to keep you any longer. But maybe I'll come back with some more episodes about as I develop my ideas on intuition and how I think, just like as a teaser, I'm starting to think through how I trusted everyone's opinion about how to mother Pippa, except my own, and how I'm now working on being an intuitive mother who listens to my own internal wisdom and what I already know as like the expert and authority on my children. And yes, I still am going to read parenting books, but then I can like think through and reject some ideas while accepting others. But you know, when I was Just it had Pippa. I remember sitting there with my Kindle and just devouring Dr. Sears's books about attachment parenting and just being like beating myself up that we weren't co-sleeping, which we never did. I'm a terrible sleeper. If I have another human being like in bed with me, a baby, I would never have slept. But I immediately felt like a failure because I wasn't meeting like his benchmarks. And breastfeeding on demand, that did not work for us. But that's what so many people had told me I had to do. And so I just sort of almost felt like, well, they must know better than me. So, this is something I could rant about again. But so that's more work that I'm doing, realizing that I needed that my postpartum experience. Yes, there was hormonal and there was pre-existing anxiety, but I think there was also too much of a misconception of mothers as martyrs, and too much of a being divorced from my own intuition and following all of the advice of experts. And yet you can't follow the advice of experts because, for every sleep training expert, there's someone who's like, don't you dare sleep train. And for every, breast is best, there's someone telling you, why, well, I mean, I breast was not best for us. There's always someone who's going to be giving you advice that is not right for you. I'm sorry, breast is not best if you're Courtney Henning Novak, because breast sucks for us, literally. All right, anyway, so I would like to wish you all a happy Mother's Day, whether it's 2020 when you're listening to this, or oh my gosh, are there still podcasts in 2050? Hello to the future. My website will eventually have show notes probably tomorrow, but it's Mother's Day, so maybe Monday. My website is now CourtneyHenningNovak.com. That's Courtney, HENNING for Henning, and Novak is NOV as in violin, AK.com. And you can also follow me on Instagram. I'm at Courtney.Novak, NOVAK. And that's where I will always post when there's a new episode. And I have been blogging more, and a lot of it's starting to be about motherhood and postpartum depression, and also just like feeling like my best self while still feeling all my feelings during this very mysterious time in history. Yeah, that's it for me. I hope you have a happy Mother's Day. But if you don't, I hope you don't feel guilty about that, because Mother's Day is one of those holidays that just seems to get preloaded with a lot of expectations and a lot of past experiences and a lot of memories. So, it's you don't have to have one perfect Mother's Day. If one of your friends is posting photos where she just looks gorgeous and radiant and is wearing the best clothes and her kids are really well behaved and they did a photo shoots like God knows where, some glamour shoot somehow during this pandemic, and then there's you and you're not wearing a bra and you're in your pajamas that are kind of ripped, and that's okay. Like, just do your best to enjoy your Mother's Day, whatever your best is. And if you don't enjoy it, there are always future Mother's Day. I have to say, my Mother's Days keep getting better and better, and this year's is actually quite exciting because my kids were excited about it. And Pippa, especially, first grader, age 7, can now write, and she's was busy making presents the past couple of days, and the kids were asking about it at bedtime, and aren't you so excited, Mama? And so it's almost like a contagious, like, I'm excited for them because they're so excited. So I'm wishing you a happy Mother's Day, whether it's this year or maybe in some future year. I love you, and I'm thinking about you. And for those of you with postpartum depression listening right now, I remember all too well how lonely and isolating it is. But you can get through this with proper support. I know it must seem impossible during a pandemic, but there are resources out there, and I'll try to list some of them in the show notes. And you can and will make a full recovery, and you are not alone. There are thousands and thousands of women right now suffering through the darkness with you. And there are thousands, thousands more who've already been through it and lived to tell the tale. Love you, and I hope you have a good week.